Court, David Koch here on behalf of Bennett Barnes. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal, please. The issue in this case is whether the jury instructions for counts 3 through 6 violated Mr. Barnes' constitutional double jeopardy rights. This case is controlled by this court's earlier decisions in both Bersheim and Berg. Those cases made it clear that if you have multiple counts charged that have the same time period involved, jurors must be instructed that each conviction on each count has to be based on a separate and distinct act. Moreover, this must be made manifestly apparent to jurors, and it was not in this case. Now, the court got it right for two of the counts. They did, in fact, use the correct language for counts 1 and 2, but that actually made things worse, because jurors would have concluded, reasonably so, that if those restrictions are only included for counts 1 and 2, that they are not bound by those same restrictions for counts 3 through 6.
As I understand it, counsel, the rationale for that was that there was a clear election by the state in closing argument.
That's correct. And we know from Berg, we know from, I think, Keir from the Supreme Court, came out last year, that the election is not going, that type of election is not going to cure an instructional problem that potentially results in a double jeopardy violation, and that's what we have here. There's really no distinction between the instructions in Mr. Barnes' case and what was involved in Bersheim and Berg. Now, the state has tried to draw two distinctions that they claim takes Mr. Barnes' case out of those other cases, and I'll address those. The first is the fact that there were special verdict forms that pertained to counts 3 and 5, and those verdict forms asked jurors whether or not those particular counts involved sexual motivation. Now, the only evidence in this case with regard to sexual motivation had to do with victim FF, and according to the state, based on that question being asked, certainly jurors would have been focusing on FF for those two counts. The argument would be more compelling, but only slightly so, had the jury come back with a yes answer on that. If they answered yes, then we would know at the very least that those two counts at least focused on FF. We still wouldn't know, for example, whether they used one delivery to FF for both counts or used one delivery to FF for all the remaining counts as well. So it only tells us so much, but it would at least tell us that they were focusing on FF. But in fact, this jury answered no, so we really don't know what they were focusing on. Is it possible they were focusing on FF but decided she wasn't credible, and that's why they answered no? Sure. But the other possibility is they were focusing on one of these other deliveries, either to AR or CR. That would also call for a no answer on that special verdict. So this doesn't solve the problem. It doesn't tell us what this jury did. The other distinguishing fact, according to the state, is that defense counsel told jurors in closing argument that they had to find a separate distinct or focused on separate distinct conduct for each count. And that's true, but this was just argument. This is not the law, and there's a discussion of that in Berg and also in Keir. It was not included in the jury instructions. And I also think it's important to point out the context of that comment being made by defense counsel. It was almost a passing reference. There wasn't a whole lot of time spent on it, and it was immediately followed by the state's rebuttal argument. And when the state got up, the prosecutor immediately started with the same point and indicated that she wanted to talk about the separate and distinct requirement, but did so only in the context of counts 1 and 2. Made no mention of counts 3 through 6, which I think further emphasized and underscored and would give the impression to jurors that that was the only two counts for which they were required to focus on separate and distinct conduct. We don't know what this jury did. They could have focused on any one of these acts in finding Mr. Barnes guilty on all the counts. Now, what we have is ambiguous jury verdicts, and we know from both DeReich and also from Keir that when we have ambiguous jury verdicts, the defendant gets the benefit of the doubt. We assume the worst. And here, assuming the worst, jurors would have focused on one of the deliveries of marijuana to find Mr. Barnes guilty on all four counts. And I'm asking the court to find that there was a double jeopardy violation in this case. Unless the court has any specific questions for me, I'll save the rest of my time for rebuttal.
May it please the court, Brian McDonald for the state. I'm here to ask the court to affirm the defendant's four convictions for delivery of a controlled substance to a minor. And I would submit that a review of the instructions as a whole and a consideration of the evidence and argument presented indicates the defendant did not receive multiple punishments based on the same act. There are four cases from the Court of Appeals that deal with the particular double jeopardy issue here. And that is the claim that the defendant has been punished more than once based on the same act because the state charged identical counts with identical, often identical dates or dates that overlapped. And those four cases are Ellis, Hayes, or Scheinman-Berg. And I would submit this: the instructions in this case are extraordinarily similar to the instructions in the Ellis case, which was the first case that dealt with this issue. And that's the case where the court actually affirmed and found there was no double jeopardy violation. I would acknowledge that this court's most recent decision in Berg, the instructions are very similar with one distinction from Ellis. And so there is something of a tension between this court's cases as they've come through discussing this issue. The instruction in Ellis, like this case, there were the defendant claimed there were two convict instructions that charged the defendant with the same crime, and which had overlapping dates, not identical dates, but overlapping dates. And the defendant claimed on appeal for the first time that there was a possibility the jury relied on the same act in convicting him. The court in Ellis actually disposed of this rather quickly and simply, and said, it's our view that the ordinary juror would understand that when two counts charge the very same type of crime, each count requires proof of a different act. And in the next sentence, the court went on to cite to several instructions it thought supported this proposition, and it pointed to the separate crime is charged in each count instruction, the fact that the jury was instructed with the unanimity instruction, or what we call the Petridge instruction, which also contains an element or that a separate act has to be found, and the fact that there were separate two convicts. And in this case, I would point to three instructions that I would suggest, read as a whole, would leave little doubt the jury would think they could rely on the exact same act to convict the defendant of the exact same crime. And that is, first, we have separate two convict instructions in this case. And unlike, for example, in Borsheim, where we had one to convict that purported to cover four different counts, which the court was critical of, and frankly, in my experience, I hadn't ever seen before, we have four separate two convict instructions. And as I think counsel has acknowledged, we really don't have four identical two convicts. We have two pairs of identical two convicts. The date ranges are different. Counts 3 and 5 have the same date range, and counts 2 and 4 have the same date range. The date ranges overlap, but they're not identical in all four counts. In addition, for counts 3 and 5, they're also distinguished for the jury, at least, in that there was a sexual motivation allegation attached to those counts. We also have the instruction a separate crime is charged in each count. And I'd acknowledge that this court in Borsheim wasn't too persuaded by that instruction, but that instruction does say that a separate crime is charged in each count, and that the jury cannot let their decision on one count control their verdict on another. And I would suggest it's a rational person hearing that instruction and then hearing two convicts that are identical would at least question if you could rely on the same act to convict the defendant again of the exact same crime, how your verdict would not control that. Well, I think if you read the instructions as a whole, it isn't ambiguous that they could rely on the same act, because I think a reasonable person isn't going to think they can convict a defendant of the exact same crime based on the exact same act when they're told they can't let their verdict on one control their verdict on the other. Yes, I am. That is the state's argument, Your Honor. And I'd add, we also have and in fact, that's essentially what Ellis held. So I guess what I'm asking the court is to follow the Ellis case, or at least acknowledge there's a fundamental disagreement, because I don't think, the counsel doesn't distinguish Ellis, and I really don't think you can distinguish the instructions in this case from those given in Ellis. And certainly in Ellis, the court thought actually any reasonable person wouldn't think they could do this. And if that's, the court in Borsheim went to great lengths to distinguish Ellis. It went on for pages. It didn't suggest Ellis was wrongly decided. It said, well, the instructions were different in Ellis.
question is whether or not we can equate count to act, crime to act. And that's the difficulty I have. And the fact that you have to render separate verdicts, frankly, I would think most people would find that somewhat confusing, because the standard with regard to the verdict is beyond a reasonable doubt. It doesn't say anything about acts. And that's the difficulty here. I can make two decisions based upon the same facts, I suspect, or I might think I could. I agree with you. If one rationally thinks through this as a lawyer would, you're not particularly confused. But we're talking about lay people here. And the question is that missing instruction that says a separate act. Somewhere, Petrich would have done it. Anything.
Well, there was a Petrich instruction given in this case, Your Honor. And, in fact,
I missed that.
In Borsheim, the court, frankly, indicates there was a different Petrich instruction given in Borsheim. And in Borsheim, the court says the Petrich instruction given in the Ellis case, which is similar to the one given here, was the distinction it relied on in distinguishing Ellis. And so that instruction indicated to the jury they had to rely on a different act. And what that instruction, for example, here said is to convict the defendant on any count of these crimes, one particular act of the crime must be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. So it tells the jury they have to find a particular act for each count. Now again...
Act of the crime?
Yes.
It doesn't
All right,
say
well.
Something along the lines of a different particular act for each crime, though, does it?
No, it does not.
Isn't it also true that the fact that the separate and distinct act instruction was given on the rape of a child counts would have led the jury to wonder why it was not given on the drug counts?
Well, I would suggest, based on argument of counsel, they certainly wouldn't. There, and it sort of gets to my next point, which is I think you don't look at the instructions in a complete vacuum. I agree the cases say you can't cure erroneous or incorrect instructions through argument of counsel, but certainly when you're viewing how the jury instructions would be read by the jury, you take into account the evidence and argument presented, at least. And in this case, you have as clear an election as is possible. In argument, the prosecutor had a chart that had each count up there it wasn't made an exhibit, wasn't in evidence. I don't think there's any dispute there was a chart, and you can review the closing argument. It's quite clear. The prosecutor says count 3 pertains to this victim and pertains to this drug. Count 4 pertains to this victim and to this drug. Count 5 pertains to this victim and to this drug. She goes through each of the counts with specificity. So I don't think the defense counsel never suggested otherwise. So we
doesn't,
have as clear
But doesn't the Keir case tell us that an election in closing argument standing alone is not enough?
I think what Keir tells us is you can't, an argument alone from counsel isn't going to cure a defective instruction. But I would point out in Keir the double jeopardy issue there was different. And so because we were dealing with two different crimes, and the question is in Keir was, what victim did the jury find? Who did the jury find
with respect
to the victims
victim.
Of the crimes?
Yeah.
And so the fact, the significance of the separate crime is charged in each count instruction doesn't weigh as great there when you have different crimes as opposed to identical crimes that are being considered, number one. You don't have the Petrich instruction at all. So that's not even a factor in there in reviewing. So I would suggest... You're correct. What Keir says is argument of counsel isn't going to cure the problem. But I think whenever the court, particularly in this kind of issue, what we're really dealing with is the potential. We don't know. There's no evidence that there was a double jeopardy violation. We're concerned about the potential for a double jeopardy violation. I think you have to look at the instructions as a whole in light of the evidence presented, and there were different victims that testified for each of these counts, remember, and the argument of counsel. And I think if you consider all those factors together, the court should affirm the convictions.
In order to do that, do we not have to depart from Borsheim directly?
I think Borsheim, because it went to great pains to distinguish the instructions with Ellis, I think you can be consistent with Borsheim. Because Borsheim made great pains to point out how the instructions were different from Ellis. And at least I would say implicitly indicated Ellis was correct. It never suggested Ellis was an incorrect decision. And so I think you would be consistent with Borsheim and Ellis in that ruling as such. Thank you.
So I'll explain why Ellis is distinguishable from Mr. Barnes' case. The Petrich instruction that was given in Ellis actually is not the same Petrich instruction that was given in Mr. Barnes' case. In Ellis, the court looked at a number of different factors in ultimately concluding the jurors would have known to base each count on a different act. And one of them was certain language in the Petrich instruction in that case that's not found in Mr. Barnes' case. And specifically, it was the language, you must unanimously agree that at least one particular act has been proved beyond a reasonable doubt for each count. And the court focused on that as part of its consideration of what this jury would have concluded. We don't have that same language in Mr. Barnes' case. There's also a distinction in Ellis involving the charging periods that we don't have in Mr. Barnes' case. There were four charges in Ellis. The charging period for counts 1 and 2 were identical. However, the two convict instruction for count 2 required jurors to find that the act for that count occurred on a different day than the act in count 1. So certainly no double jeopardy problem as we have in Mr. Barnes' case. The time period charged for count 3 and count 4, they were different from each other, and they were also different from the period in counts 1 and 2. Now, there was some overlap in those periods, but what we don't have any indication of in Ellis, which we do have here in Mr. Barnes' case, is in Mr. Barnes' case, although the periods are not exactly the same, they're the same for 2 counts and then 2 other counts, it was clear from the evidence in Mr. Barnes' case that really all of the charged acts in all of the counts occurred after June 1st, 2007. This occurred after the family had moved back to Seattle, and that's apparent from all of the witnesses' testimony. So although there's some overlap in the charging periods in these various counts, the jury would have recognized that everything happened from June 1st, 2007 to November 2007, making it more likely that they would be looking at the same act for each count, since all the evidence involved that same period. We don't know that to be the case in Ellis, so there certainly are distinctions. This case, the instructions in this case, including the Petrich instruction, is indistinguishable from the one in Bursheim and Berg. So, you know, Petrich deals with a different issue, making sure that the jurors focus on the same act for that particular count, but it doesn't speak to whether they can then use that act for each of the other counts. So Petrich solves one problem, but it doesn't solve this problem. And Keir does speak to this. Keir came out last year, and it was a double jeopardy case. It's a slightly different double jeopardy issue, but it's very much the same, too, because in that case, there was the assault charge and the robbery charge. If jurors used the same victim for both those charges, then there was a double jeopardy violation. If they used different victims, then there was not. The instructions didn't tell jurors what to do on one of the charges. They did identify it on the other. During closing argument, the prosecutor got up there and said, this robbery charge pertains to victim A. This assault charge pertains to victim B, made an election, thought that was good enough. The Supreme Court looked at it and said, no, that's argument. That's not part of the state's proof. It didn't make it into the jury instructions. Because we don't know what this jury did, and the instructions could have allowed them to convict in a way that violates double jeopardy, we're going to reverse. So Keir is very much on point with what happened here. Unless the court has any further questions for me, I ask you to reverse all but one of the counts.